I'm John Baffser. This is the John Baffser Show. Hotel Mars. Episode N. David Livingston, Dr. Space, is here, and we're discussing the program called Artemis, which our correspondent and informant, William Harwood, Bill Harwood of CBS News, CBS Space News, tells us, reminds us, tells us that Artemis was the sister of Apollo. So there is a legend link here, and we come now to a wrinkle that was not, well, it's more than a wrinkle, it's a great big bump that did not exist in the 1960s in the original Apollo program. That is Lunar Gateway, sometimes called the Lunar Orbital Platform Gateway, LOPG. I just like Gateway. Bill, Gateway, I understand, is a part of an older program, the Asteroid Redirect Mission. It's also something that is part of the SLS projection. Does it integrate into this plan to land on the moon? Do we need Gateway there then, now? And if it's not then, how will Gateway figure in future moon missions?
Well, Gateway is absolutely integral to the Artemis program. It is not very, it doesn't have much at all in common anymore with the old Asteroid Redirect mission. It is a very small space station. It's got a solar electric propulsion system, a very small habitation module, and then the lunar lander will be attached to that. So when the astronauts show up in the Orion capsule, they will dock with the Gateway. They'll move into this habitation module, check out the lander, get on board the lander, go down to the surface, do their mission, come back to the Gateway, and from there get back in the Orion capsule to come back to Earth. Now, is it needed or not? You're correct. The Apollo program didn't use a space station. The Apollo spacecraft, the command module, and the lunar lander, they went directly into a low lunar orbit, and from there, the lander proceeded to the surface. The Orion capsule's propulsion system is being provided by the European Space Agency. It is not as powerful as the old Apollo propulsion system in what they used to call the service module, and it can't go to that low orbit like Apollo could. But instead, and this fits in with the whole Artemis plan, it goes a very interesting polar orbit around the moon. It's a very high orbit, but it's one that they can change. That's what lets them get down to the south pole of the moon, which is where they want to go. Remember, Apollo landed in the equatorial regions of the moon. This is going to the south pole, and eventually the north pole as well, for that matter. But this orbit that Gateway will be in gives the astronauts access to pretty much anywhere on the surface of the moon. That is a big plus. And so the Orion capsule goes to high orbit where the Gateway is, and then the lunar lander with its what they call a transfer stage goes from there down to the low orbit where the actual descent will begin. So the way Artemis is currently envisioned, Gateway is absolutely critical. Could you do this without Gateway? Yes, if you beefed up the propulsion system of Orion, made some other changes, you could do that. But NASA says that the Gateway is valuable from a variety of standpoints. You can do science up there. You can test systems up there that you eventually want to use to go to Mars, and on and on and on. So at this point, it would be a major, major change of plans to do away with Gateway. That is integral to the program, and they've already let contracts for the propulsion part of it and the habitation module. There are companies already building those components.
David?
Are those contracts part of the existing NASA budget, or do they depend on Congress appropriating more money?
NASA was able to get it started as it is, but to get these finished in time to get there by 2024, definitely more money is going to have to come down the pipe. And as you both know, if the government shuts down, if there's a holdup like that politically, where you know, the agency's budget gets frozen at current levels, then that clearly will trigger downstream delays. So this is a program that works on paper, but it's got to be funded. It's just not something you can do on the cheap, and that money's going to have to start flowing next year, and it's going to have to keep flowing for the duration.
I note that Gateway is a creative construction of many hands, including Roscosmos, the Japanese Space Agency, the European Space Agency, certainly NASA. There might be others involved. The Canadians might be involved. But in any event, are all these parts moving together? This looks like a very large committee.
It is a big program, no question about that. Now, you're correct that NASA wants to get international cooperation in the Artemis program. They want other countries, they want other rockets, they want whatever, you know, whoever wants to join, they're welcome to do it. As it stands right now, Gateway is an all U.S. Project. The propulsion system is being built by Maxar, the habitation modules being built by Northrop Grumman. Lockheed Martin's building the Orion capsule that will dock there. They're bidding on who's going to build the lander, but right now those are U.S. companies. The European Space Agency, of course, supplies the propulsion system for the Orion module. That's absolutely critical. And NASA wants to get more private companies as well as other countries involved in this program. I think they got a pretty good chance of doing it.
David?
Bill, how frequently can Gateway be used? Is it manned or staffed all year round? Can you only use it a little bit of time? What's the clarification on that?
No, it's strictly used when a crew is there for a landing mission. So you could. There are some plans for, you know, a Phase B sort of Gateway where people could stay up there for weeks at a time, maybe months. But in the way we're going to see it in the next several years, it is strictly a way station. The folks dock there, they go inside, check out their lander, and then they land. They don't spend a lot of time there. But the whole concept assumes that at some point, you know, you will have science experiments running on Gateway. You will have remotely operated experiments, let me put it that way, as well as human-tended experiments at some point, you know, lunar observation, resource management, that sort of thing. But that's down the road. The initial Gateway, it's like going on a camping trip. You spend a few days in your tent, and then you come home.
Now, the final moving part, large pieces here, is the spacesuit. I understand they're giving us a new super-duper spacesuit that'll look more like Buck Rogers than the underwater affair that we've seen these last years, or the stripped-down version the Russians prefer. Have they settled on a spacesuit, or is this still all up for design?
They have settled on a spacesuit. That's one thing NASA is not contracting out right now, anyway. They hope to do that down the road. It's being built in-house at the Johnson Space Center. As a matter of fact, they unveiled it about 2 weeks ago in Washington. And it's kind of cool looking, you know. It's got some major improvements over the old suit they use now. You know, John, as you well know, the suits on board the space station right now were really designed 40 years ago for
right.
the space shuttle.
Right.
And they, you know, when you pressurize those things, they're hard to move around in, et cetera, et cetera. The new suit has bearings and all sorts of flexible joints so that an astronaut wearing this suit, even when it's pressurized, can bend over, can turn at the waist, can do all the things, you know, that you and I are used to doing in Earth's gravity and a normal pressure. It's not quite that good in a spacesuit, but it's pretty good, and it's a major improvement over what they've had in the past. They're going to start testing those suits on the International Space Station in the next couple of years before they go down to the surface of the moon. So we're gonna see them in action here not too long.
Are those suits, the new suit, is it for both the surface of the moon and also for inside the Orion and moving around the Gateway, all three purposes?
No, it's really a lunar space suit. It's for deep space exploration. When they launch in the Orion, they have a different type of suit. It's one of those... It's a pressure suit. It looks kind of like the ones the guys used to wear in the space shuttle age, those orange pressure suits, but it's not as bulky, more comfortable by all accounts, and they say safer. That's what they'll use to launch and land the new moon suit, you know, they would don and get in their lander and go down. That's for walking around on the surface.
So the moon suit is the really cool one with the big bubble head. Right.
Yeah.
It really looks cool. Also, it's good for cameras. You can see the person.
Yeah, well, you certainly can. And, you know, by all accounts, I mean, they've had astronauts put these on and talk about them. They're a huge step up from the suits that they've been using.
David?
Bill, do you see SpaceX rockets and Blue Origin rockets being able to go to the Gateway? Would they be able to compete for that, or is it strictly SLS?
We've got about a minute, Bill. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. As a matter of fact, in the briefings we had today from NASA, they were showing a chart that had a list of all the rockets that could be used for this Artemis program, and Blue Origin's New Glenn rocket, SpaceX's Starship, all those rockets were shown. So I think if they get tested and are ready to fly, NASA would love to put them to use. And one thing we haven't talked about just in the few seconds we have, you know, the other big moving part of all this is the Space Launch System, huge, huge rocket, bigger than the Saturn V. They're hoping to get that shipped down to the Stennis Space Center at the end of the year so they can put it up on a test stand and fire its engines for 8 minutes, just like it would be going to space. When that's over, they ship it to the Cape, and hopefully it's ready to launch on an unpiloted test flight in early 2021, but that's a huge milestone. You got to have the rocket, to make any of the things we've been talking about happen.
Bill Harwood, William Harwood, he is CBS Space News, David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. Artemis is the future for NASA, for commercial space, for alliances with overseas big space agencies, and for the private enterprise, too, on the surface of the moon. I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show. I'm John Batchelor. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. David Livingston, Dr. Space himself of The Space Show, is here as my colleague and co-host. And we're very pleased to welcome Bill Harwood, William Harwood of CBS Space News, to report on a very large program that was endorsed in 2017. This is the Lunar Campaign. It is called Artemis. It's artful to call a program for the moon by a Greek name. But in any event, it has moving parts. And those parts are to be married up over these next years. It's officially called a crewed lunar exploration. Bill, a very good evening to you. There's so many moving parts with Artemis. I want to begin with what we know, which is the lander programs. I understand that right now they're giving out contracts for the lander programs. So we're reimagining the landing on the moon in 1969. How will it look different, Bill? Good evening to you.
And good evening to you, John. And just very quickly before I answer your question, I'll point out that, as NASA likes to point out, Artemis was the sister of Apollo. So there is some synergy here 50 years after the Apollo program with naming this new lunar initiative Artemis. So that said, there, as you said, there are major moving parts really all over the place right now. You know, NASA's building a gigantic new rocket bigger than the Saturn V, called the Space Launch System, that will launch Orion capsules and astronauts to the moon. And as you say, there is a contract, or there's not a contract yet. They're going to be accepting bids or accepting offers from various companies within the next few days to build the lander that would then carry the astronauts down to the surface and back up again. It is a very different lander from the one that the Apollo astronauts used. This one can carry up to four people eventually. It'll carry two people on the initial flights. But it comes in three pieces. It's got a landing stage that's being built by Blue Origin, or it could be built by Blue Origin, I should say. Blue Origin, owned by Amazon founder Jeff Bezos. Boeing is also expected to compete for the lander. There are several companies involved in this. There's a crew cabin that rides on top of the whole thing that would launch off of the descent stage, kind of like the Apollo lunar lander did. And then there's another stage in there that carries it down from a small space station to the low orbit it'll need to get down to the south pole of the moon. And, John, that's the biggest difference. They are targeting the poles of the moons for these landings because that's where instruments in orbit show that ice might exist in permanently shadowed craters, craters where the floors of these craters never see sunlight. They believe there is ice down in there. And, of course, if you've got ice, you can break that down into hydrogen and oxygen. You got water, you got rocket fuel, you got air. So those are exciting things to think about, which NASA's hoping to begin as early as 2024 with the first landing.
So just to summarize here, the lander is not built yet. The contract is available and is to be put out for competition. And there are many companies imagining what the lander will look like. But you describe components that are very similar to the original Apollo lander, maybe larger.
Similar, but scaled up a little bit. And the big difference, John, is these are going to be commercial spacecraft. In other words, NASA doesn't own them like they own the Apollo lander. This is say, for example, if the Blue Origin team wins that contract, that's their lander. And NASA would basically hire it out, if you will. Kind of like the agency is doing with their supply ships up to the space station. Those are commercially procured now, and they're building new cruise ships to carry astronauts to and from the station. Those are being commercially built by Boeing and SpaceX. So that's a major difference here, is the getting commercial, the private sector on board in this moon program.
David?
Bill, do the private sector company pay for the lander, or does NASA and the government pay for the lander? I'm confused about that.
Well, it'll be a little bit of both. Just like with the commercial cargo ships that now go to the station, the contracts NASA will ultimately sign requires the winning company to put their own money in and to develop this hardware, while NASA contracts will obviously, the money that they're paying in those contracts will obviously go a long way toward getting these things built. But it's, I won't call it a 50-50 process. It's government money that's going to make this happen, but the companies have to throw in money and expertise of their own. It's a significant thing, and remember, because it's a commercially built spacecraft, these companies are free to use them in any way they want to besides just NASA. You know, if a commercial market ultimately develops, either in low Earth orbit or around the moon, you know, Boeing and SpaceX could carry people to orbit on their cruise ships they're now building for the space station, and presumably the lander down the road, you could use a lander for other purposes besides just NASA missions. NASA really wants to get private sector involved in spaceflight on a commercial basis, not just as someone that NASA hires to do a specific job.
We've started with the lander, the ascent and descent stage. Now we go to the crew vehicle itself called Orion. They've committed that, and there are photographs of it everywhere, and it's under development. Are they satisfied with the craft that they're now building, Bill?
They are. And John, a little bit of history. You know, the Orion spacecraft was originally designed when the Bush administration in the early 2000s decided to, go back to the moon. And then the Obama administration canceled that moon program in favor of a different scenario. And now the Trump administration has reset the moon as the goal. The Orion capsule was there all along. Lockheed Martin is building it. They started working on this back in the early 2000s, and they're basically ready to fly. We had a briefing today in the very first one that's going to go up on an unpiloted mission in 2021. It's almost finished. So that hardware is coming along fine, and NASA's very pleased with it.
How big is the craft? How many astronauts can it carry?
The baseline is to carry four. You could put five in there, I think, possibly even six if you didn't carry any cargo. But the baseline plan is to carry four astronauts at a time. The initial flight down to the moon, like I said, that's going to be a two-person crew. But by 2028, NASA wants to have regularly scheduled flights to the moon, ultimately perhaps putting habitat modules on the surface where astronauts could live and work for several weeks, if not months at a time. And when that time finally comes around, you'd probably be launching four people on this thing. And the Orion capsule also would be, or at least the derivative of it, could be used for eventual flights to Mars. You'd have to have a habitat module to go to Mars with the capsule, but the capsule is how you'd get into orbit and get back to Earth when the mission's over.
David?
Where do we stand on funding for Artemis, given that Congress hasn't come up yet with the fiscal year 2020 budget?
That is an excellent question, and the answer is I don't know. As you all probably know, the Trump administration recently requested an additional $1.6 billion for NASA in next year's budget to kickstart development of the lunar lander. We don't know yet what NASA is going to need in the years beyond that. Estimates are as high as, $5 to $8 billion a year on top of NASA's regular budget. Now, will Congress go along with that? That is an open question. I would say it's even an open question if the Trump administration will go along with that in the long run. That's a fair amount of money. But on the other hand, if you want to make this happen by 2024, which is the administration's goal, clearly NASA has to have a significant boost in its budget to even have any chance of making that possible. So technically, they can absolutely do it. This is not requiring any new technology. They know how to do this. It's just a matter of, hiring the companies, building these spacecraft, and getting it off the ground. But it is going to cost money. It's not going to be cheap.
We're speaking with William Harwood, Bill Harwood, who's CBS News space reporter. We're talking about a program under review always by the U.S. Congress and NASA. But it has these moving parts. We started with the lander. We moved to the crewed vehicle, the one that will carry astronauts from the surface of the planet Earth to the orbit around the moon and then the descent. Now, there's a piece here. When we come back, we'll discuss, because I want to see how it's integrated into the plan, which is called Lunar Gateway, the LOP. Because the Lunar Gateway looks like an ISS in orbit of the moon, what place does it play in the ambition to land on the surface of the moon and going forward to run regular missions? David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. Modern retailers need every financial advantage to compete with online and win. New retail profits can be driven by better serving the customers you already have. Let PRN show you how to capture your fair share of digital marketing dollars from the $1 trillion global marketing spend. Smart retail digital networks from PRN help you monetize the aisle and win the day. To learn more, go to PRN.com today, a Scala Incorporated company. That's PRN.com today to unlock this new revenue stream. Scala, a leading marketing technology company, powers millions of digital signs around the world, leading the wave of retail transformation. Modernize your digital experience with Scala.